Chapter 4. We lay offshore about a mile in the dark. The current had freshened up with the sundown, and I noticed it running in. I could see the Morro light way down to the westward and the glow of Havana, and the lights opposite us were Rincon and Baracoa. I headed her up against the current until I was past Bacuranao and nearly to Cojimar. Then I let her drift down. It was plenty dark, but I could tell good where we were. I had all the lights out. "What's it going to be, Harry?" Eddie asked me. He was beginning to be spooked again. "What do you think?" "I don't know," he said. "You've got me worried." He was pretty close to the shakes, and when he came near me, he had a breath like a buzzard. "What time is it?"
"I'll go down and see," he said.
He came back up and said it was 9:30. "Are you hungry?" I asked him.
"No," he said. "You know I couldn't eat, Harry."
"All right," I told him. "You can have one." After he had it, I asked him how he felt. He said he felt fine. "I'm going to give you a couple more in a little while," I told him. "I know you haven't got any cojones unless you've got rum and there isn't much on board, so you'd better go easy."
"Tell me what's up," said Eddie.
"Listen," I said, talking to him in the dark. "We're going to Bacuranao and pick up 12 chinks. You take the wheel when I tell you to, and do what I tell you to. We'll take the 12 chinks on board, and we'll lock them below forward. Go on forward now and fasten the hatch from the outside." He went up, and I saw him shadowed against the dark. He came back and said, "Harry, can I have one of those now?" "No," I said. "I want you rum brave. I don't want you useless."
"I'm a good man, Harry. You'll see."
"You're a rummy," I said. "Listen, one chink is going to bring those 12 out. He's going to give me some money at the start. When they're all on board, he's going to give me some more money. When you see him start to hand me money the second time, you put her ahead and hook her up and head her out to sea. Don't you pay any attention to what happens. You keep her going out no matter what happens. Do you understand?"
"Yes."
"If any chink starts bursting out of the cabin or coming through the hatch once we're out and underway, you take that pump gun and blow them back as fast as they come out. Do you know how to use the pump gun?"
"No, but you can show me."
"You'd never remember. Do you know how to use the Winchester?"
"Just pump the lever and shoot it."
"That's right," I said. "Only don't shoot any holes in the hull."
"You better give me that other drink," Eddie said.
"All right, I'll give you a little one." I gave him a real one. I knew they wouldn't make him drunk now, not pouring them into all that fear. But each one would work for a little while. After he drank this, Eddie said, just as though he was happy,
"So we're going to run chinks. Well, by God, I always said I'd run Chinamen if I was ever broke."
"But you never got broke before, eh?" I said to him. He was funny, all right. I gave him 3 more drinks to keep him brave before it was 10:30. It was funny watching him, and it kept me from thinking about it myself. I hadn't figured on all this weight. I'd planned to leave after dark, run out just out of the glare, and coast along to Cojimar. At a little before 11, I saw the 2 lights show on the point. I waited a little while, and then I took her in slow. Bacuranao is a cove where there used to be a big dock for loading sand. There's a little river that comes in when the rains open the bar across the mouth. The northers in the winter pile the sand up and close it. They used to go in with schooners and load guavas from the river, and there used to be a town. But the hurricane took it, and it is all gone now, except one house that some Gallegos built out of the shacks the hurricane blew down, and that they use for a clubhouse on Sundays when they come out to swim and picnic from Havana. There is one other house where the delegate lives, but it is back from the beach. Each little place like that all down the coast has a government delegate, but I figured the chink must use his own boat and have him fixed. As we came in, I could smell the sea grape and that sweet smell from the brush you get off the land. "Get up forward," I said to Eddie.
"You can't hit anything on that side," he said. "The reef's on the other side as you go in."
You see? He'd been a good man once. "Watch her," I said, and I took her in to where I know they could see us. With no surf, they could hear the engine. I didn't want to wait around, not knowing whether they saw us or not, so I flashed the running lights on once, just the green and red, and turned them off. Then I turned her and headed her out and let her lay there, just outside, with the engine just ticking. There was quite a little swell that close in. "Come on back here," I said to Eddie, and I gave him a real drink.
"Do you cock it first with your thumb?"
he whispered to me. He was sitting at the wheel now, and I'd reached up and had both the cases open and the butts pulled out about 6 inches.
"That's right." "Oh, boy," he said.
It certainly was wonderful what a drink would do to him and how quick. We lay there, and I could see a light from the delegate's house back through the brush. I saw the two lights on the point go down, and one of them moving off around the point. They must have blown the other one out. Then in a little while, coming out of the cove, I see a boat come toward us with a man sculling. I could tell by the way he swung back and forth. I knew he had a big oar. I was pretty pleased. If they were sculling, that meant one man. They came alongside.
"Good evening, Captain," said Mr. Singh.
"Come astern and put her broadside," I said to him. He said something to the kid who was sculling, but he couldn't scull her backwards, so I took hold of the gunwale and passed her astern. There were 8 men in the boat. The 6 Chinks, Mr. Singh, and the kid sculling. While I was pulling her astern, I was waiting for something to hit me on top of the head, but nothing did. I straightened up and let Mr. Singh hold on to the stern. "Let's see what it looks like," I said. He handed it to me, and I took the roll of it up to where Eddie was at the wheel and put on the binnacle light. I looked at it carefully. It looked all right to me, and I turned off the light. Eddie was trembling. "Pour yourself one," I said. I saw him reach for the bottle and tip it up. I went back to the stern. "All right," I said. "Let 6 come on board." Mr. Singh and the Cuban that sculled were having a job holding their boat from knocking in what little swell there was. I heard Mr. Singh say something in Chink, and all the Chinks in the boat started to climb onto the stern. "One at a time," I said. He said something again, and then one after another 6 Chinks came over the stern. They were all lengths and sizes. "Show them forward," I said to Eddie.
"Right this way, gentlemen," said Eddie.
By God, I knew he had taken a big one. "Lock the cabin," I said, when they were all in.
"Yes, sir," said Eddie.
"I will return with the others," said Mr. Singh.
"Okay," I told him. I pushed them clear, and the boy with him started sculling off.
"Listen," I said to Eddie, "you lay off that bottle. You're brave enough now."
"Okay, chief," said Eddie.
"What's the matter with you?"
"This is what I like to do," said Eddie. "You say you just pull it backward with your thumb."
"You lousy rummy," I told him. "Give me a drink out of that."
"All gone," said Eddie. "Sorry, chief."
"Listen, what you have to do now is watch when he hands me the money and put her ahead."
"Okay, chief," said Eddie.
I reached up and took the other bottle and got the corkscrew and drew the cork. I took a good drink and went back to the stern, putting the cork in tight and laying the bottle behind 2 wicker jugs full of water. "Here comes Mr. Singh," I said to Eddie.
"Yes, sir," said Eddie.
The boat came out sculling toward us. He brought her astern, and I let them do the holding on. Mr. Singh had hold of the roller we had across the stern to slide a big fish aboard. "Let them come aboard," I said, "one at a time." 6 more assorted Chinks came on board over the stern. "Open up and show them forward," I told Eddie.
"Yes, sir,"
said Eddie. "Lock the cabin."
"Yes, sir."
I saw he was at the wheel.
"All right, Mr. Singh," I said. "Let's see the rest of it."
He put his hand in his pocket and reached the money out toward me. I reached for it and grabbed his wrist with the money in his hand. And as he came forward on the stern, I grabbed his throat with the other hand. I felt her start and then churn ahead as she hooked up, and I was plenty busy with Mr. Singh. But I could see the Cuban standing in the stern of the boat holding the sculling oar as we pulled away from her through all the flopping and bouncing Mr. Singh was doing. He was flopping and bouncing worse than any dolphin on a gaff. I got his arm around behind him and came up on it, but I brought it up too far because I felt it go. When it went, he made a funny little noise and came forward, me holding him throat and all, and bit me in the shoulder. But when I felt the arm go, I dropped it. It wasn't any good to him anymore, and I took him by the throat with both hands, and brother, that Mr. Singh could flop just like a fish, true.
his loose arm flailing. But I got him forward onto his knees and had both thumbs well in behind his talk box, and I bent the whole thing back until she cracked. Don't think you can't hear it crack either. I held him quiet just a second, and then I laid him down across the stern. He lay there face up, quiet in his good clothes, with his feet in the cockpit, and I left him. I picked up the money off the cockpit floor and took it up and put on the binnacle light and counted it. Then I took the wheel and told Eddie to look under the stern for some pieces of iron that I use for anchoring whenever we fished bottom fishing on patches or rocky bottom where you wouldn't want to risk an anchor.
I can't find anything, he said.
He was scared being down there by Mr. Singh. Take the wheel, I said. Keep her out. There was a certain amount of moving around going on below, but I wasn't spooked about them. I found a couple of pieces of what I wanted, iron from the old coaling dock at Tortugas, and I took some snapper line and made a couple of good big pieces fast to Mr. Singh's ankles. Then when we were about 2 miles offshore, I slid him over. He slid over smooth off the roller. I never even looked in his pockets. I didn't feel like fooling with him. He'd bled a little on the stern from his nose and his mouth, and I dipped a bucket of water that nearly pulled me overboard the way we were going, and cleaned her off good with a scrub brush from under the stern. Slow her down, I said to Eddie. What if he floats up? Eddie said. I dropped him in about 700 fathoms, I said. He's going down all that way. That's a long way, brother. He won't float till the gas brings him up, and all the time he's going with the current and baiting up fish. Hell, I said, you don't have to worry about Mr. Singh.
What did you have against him?
Eddie asked me. Nothing, I said. He was the easiest man to do business with I ever met. I thought there must be something wrong all the time.
What did you kill him for?
To keep him from killing 12 other chinks, I told him. Harry, he said, you've got to give me one because I can feel him coming on. It made me sick to see his head all loose like that. So I gave him one.
What about the chinks?
Eddie said. I want to get them out as quick as I can, I told him, before they smell up the cabin.
Where are you going to put them?
We'll run them right into the Long Beach, I told him.
Take her in now?
Sure, I said. Take her in slow. We came in slow over the reef and to where I could see the beach shine. There's plenty of water over the reef, and inside it's all sandy bottom and slopes right into shore. Get up forward and give me the depth. He kept sounding with a grains pole, motioning me on with the pole. He came back and motioned me to stop. I came astern on her.
You've got about 5 feet.
We've got to anchor, I said. If anything happens so we haven't time to get her up, we can cut loose or break her off. Eddie paid out rope, and when finally she didn't drag, he made her fast. She swung stern in.
It's sandy bottom, you know, he said.
How much water have we got at the stern? Not over 5 feet. You take the rifle, I said, and be careful.
Let me have one, he said.
He was plenty nervous. I gave him one and took down the pump gun. I unlocked the cabin door, opened it, and said, come on out. Nothing happened. Then one chink put his head out and saw Eddie standing there with a rifle and ducked back. Come on out. Nobody's going to hurt you, I said. Nothing doing. Only lots of talk and chink.
Come on out, you,
Eddie said. My God, I knew he'd had the bottle. Put that bottle away, I said to him, or I'll blow you out of the boat. Come on out, I said to them, or I'll shoot in at you. I saw one of them looking at the corner of the door, and he saw the beach evidently because he begins to chatter. Come on, I said, or I'll shoot. Out they came. Now I tell you, it would take a hell of a mean man to butcher a bunch of chinks like that, and I'll bet there would be plenty of trouble too, let alone mess. They came out and they were scared, and they didn't have any guns, but there were 12 of them. I walked backwards down to the stern holding the pump gun. Get overboard, I said. It's not over your heads. Nobody moved. Over you go. Nobody moved.
You yellow rat-eating aliens,
Eddie said.
Get overboard.
Shut your drunken mouth, I told him. No swim, one chink said. No need swim, I said. No deep.
Come on, get overboard, Eddie said.
Come astern here, I said. Take your gun in one hand and your grain pole in the other and show them how deep it is. He showed them, holding up the wet pole.
No need swim? The one asked me.
No.
True?
Yes.
Where we?
Cuba.
You damn crook, he said, and went over the side, hanging on and then letting go. His head went under, but he came up and his chin was out of water. Damn crook, he said. God damn crook.
He was mad and plenty brave. He said something in Chink, and the others started going into the water off the stern.
All right, I said to Eddie, get the anchor up.
As we headed her out, the moon started to come up, and you could see the Chinks with just their heads out of water, walking ashore, and the shine of the beach and the brush behind. We got out past the reef, and I looked back once and saw the beach and the mountains starting to show up. Then I put her on her course for Key West.
Now you can take a sleep, I said to Eddie.
No, wait. Go below and open all the ports to get the stink out and bring me the iodine.
What's the matter? He said when he brought it.
I cut my finger.
Do you want me to steer?
Get a sleep, I said. I'll wake you up. He lay down on the built-in bunk in the cockpit over the gas tank, and in a little while he was asleep.